Radio Australia, on air and online at radioaustralia.net.au.
And now someone to stop me from my useless rambling. Maurice Misiulowski is a business futurist. You can find him at businessfuturist.com. Maurice, welcome.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you.
Can't we just uselessly ramble together?
We could, but then people might just switch off and go, I can't follow these guys at all.
Never. See, we're doing it right now. Let's move on.
Well, it's interesting because we were discussing changes in the education system to do with student visas earlier on in this program. Education, the way we do it, it will keep changing, of course. That's just the nature of life, evolution. But you have looked way into the future, how technology will change education. And in fact, education, the overseas education market, might not be a great place to put all your eggs in one basket, so to speak. If you're looking at money, which the Australian government, you know, would be fair to say is, the Australian education industry is the third largest sector earner for this country. But you're saying, you know, it's all going to change. It might, a couple of things might collapse. The model's changing. Tell us what you mean.
Well, collapse is too strong a word, but definitely the model's changing. So higher education, as you've said absolutely beautifully, has evolved over time. It's been changing and changing. It started off really only 400 or 500 years ago, strangely enough, in monasteries. And it was the purview of only the elite. So there's only a few people that ever got a higher education qualification. It is very much a construct of our last 100 years. That's when more and more people had access to it. And really it's over the last 20 or 30 years that we've had universal access to it. There was an interesting report put out by IBIS World about a year ago that talked about the evolution of higher education, and they put it into 5 cycles. And they said we were ending the fourth cycle, that we were about to end it, and it went from 1982 to 2020. Without getting too scientific about this, what they were saying was that the university for 1982 to 2020 is the way that you and I envision it. It's the classroom, it's the tutorial, it's students turning up, it's X number of people in a room, it's one lecture, it's all those things that we've come to know and have served us really well. Nothing wrong with that. But what IBIS World has said or postulated is that we're about to go into a fifth cycle of higher education, and they're saying that will start somewhere around 1921. And in that space, and if you want to spin it out, 2021, I should say, because I'm a futurist, not a historian, 2021, and it's going to go through to 2059. How do I know it's 2059?
It all starts in about 10 years from now.
It does. And what they're saying is that over this next decade that we're going to see higher education devolve or change significantly in what it offers, how it offers it, where it offers it, and over the next 10 years that will eventually settle down and then it'll start to rise again. So at this stage, it's talking about a phoenix type approach. At this stage, there's a lot of things. And if you look at higher education, there are a lot of changes going on, especially in Australia, in the structures of universities, the courses they offer, the fees that they charge for them, the way that they do them. Lots and lots of structural changes. In fact, we haven't seen it before. Part of my life is actually as a past academic. I lectured 15 years, so I'm used to this environment. And it was pretty much status quo through the 80s and 90s, not much changed. But now, lots and lots. So what they're talking about is the entire structure, the way that we go about university, the way we go about getting higher education will be different from the viewpoint that we believe that people will have 6 vocations, so 6 different careers in their lifetime. They might be an accountant, they could go and become a landscape gardener, so really different careers all the way through. And statistically also, this is Australian Bureau of Statistics, says that kids that are going through or starting university now are likely to have 14 different jobs through those 6 careers. So we're talking about lots of change, lots of differences in people's lives, and not one linear piece of education.
Well, we've been talking about that in recent years anyway. Yeah. It's quite different from the previous generation, I guess, where one person would go to work in the same workplace all their life.
Yeah.
You go for the 25-year, loyal employer award, and you go to 50 years, and it was
the Golden Watch.
Well, yes, that's 50 years, isn't it?
I think so. I'll let you know when I get there.
Maybe it's not that much. That statistically just doesn't sound quite right. But anyway, those days are gone, and nowadays people are much more willing to change jobs just to find a right fit. That becomes more important than just putting bread on the table.
Yeah, and it really comes to the complete different mindset of why we work and what we work for. That when I finished my education, it was pretty much the thought, and that was in the 80s, it was pretty much the thought that whatever that piece of paper was that you finished your higher education with would be the license that would see you through for the 40 or 50 years. You might have to do a couple of little courses along the way to top up with modern knowledge, but that was it. That was who you were pretty much. And nowadays, that's not the case. So universities are beginning to change towards that thought. They're beginning to offer a more flexible type approach. So we have a university in Melbourne, actually Melbourne University, that has now changed the way that it's structured its ingoing courses. It's using an American model where there are a number of base courses that you do regardless of where you want to end up. So there are three or four different entry courses, and once you've completed those basic modules, then you can specialise and become, you know, the lawyer, the doctor, the engineer, the vet, or whatever else you want to become.
Don't they sort of, haven't they been existing for a number of years? I'm just thinking of those postgraduate courses where if you've already done a particular degree, then you only need, an extra year or two, depending on what career you would next go into.
Yeah, and that's right. That's for the postgraduate. This is the undergraduate. This is the person leaving their VCE, their HSC, whatever that year 12 is called, and then going into their first university experience. So what that model does is it says that regardless of what career you go into, there are some basic needs you'll have. So you'll need to communicate, you'll need to be able to do all these other things. And it doesn't matter what you end up, these are the things you'll need. So it teaches those things in the basic course, that year or two, gives people that strength of knowledge, that underpinning, that foundation work.
More life skills for workplace.
Yes, absolutely. So all of those things are included. And it says now that you've got a basic foundation, now that you've been with us for a while, now make a wiser decision about what you want to do for a vocation. You know, now become the doctor, the lawyer, whatever other courses we offer. And you can specialise, of course, in those few years. You can take some modules, you can take some bits and pieces around that give you a closer view to where you're headed. But what we're talking about here is really skilling people so that they become this wonderful world of lifelong learners, because that's what they're going to have to do.
You know, it's so important, because the impact of not knowing those skills is being felt even right now. Yeah. I have heard people comment that they know people who are from a different culture. Maybe the English is not quite their first language, or they're not exposed to the culture of communicating confidently. They have the degree, they've got all the qualifications necessary, they can do the job, but when it comes to, say, getting a promotion in the same workplace, and you do just as good a job as the next person, if you can't communicate as well as the next person, you lose out.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are, in the primary and secondary school, we talk a lot about teaching different skills now, not just reading, writing and arithmetic as we used to. We now talk about teaching collaboration, about teaching problem solving, about teaching communication, because they're, again, the base tools that all of those students are going to have to take throughout their lives, because most people now in the work environment have to problem solve. They're no longer given a piece of paper with a formula that says, this is your job, do this at 9 o'clock, do this at 4 o'clock. They actually have to figure out stuff along the way. They have to be able to get along with their fellow team members. Now, that's always kind of been there, but it's just become more and more important in our work environment for the reason that you say, that people are responsible for their own careers, their own vocations. They want to get the most out of them, and employers aren't willing or able to spend the time to say, we'll give you a couple of years to get up and running. You know, you've really got to hit the deck running. And that's what any education system is about putting out people that are ready, not necessarily to work, but necessarily to go out into that field, who feel comfortable, who are strong, and who understand whatever it is they need. They have the basic skills to be able to make a go of it.
That's a very significant change. But you were also mentioning earlier how this whole overseas student market thing, it might just turn on its head. It's something we're going to have to think very differently about, because it's going to operate very differently in the near future.
Well, it can do, and it does already. So we're talking about a lot of what the government announced is great stuff, but it's based on physical people coming to physical environments. And we know that in education down the track, that's not necessarily going to be the case. So universities are not going to disappear. Certainly there will be the opportunity to go to physical classrooms and do all the things we have. But increasingly, people are able to do it in a virtual sense. They're able to do it perhaps overseas, so they can take a module. So what we're finding now is our courses that, my terminology, are hyper-personalised. And that's going to become more and more the case down the track. So whereas up until
hyper-personalized,
which is a big way of saying it's extremely selfish and it's what I want it to be. I mean, that's what hyper-personalized is. So education up until now has been a box. You know, you you signed up to do that particular course, and there were various subjects you did, and you could choose your subjects and your electives, and that was pretty much it. Nothing else was on the offer. What we're finding now is with some of the higher education offerings, and certainly into the future it will be the case, is that you can go out of the discipline, so out of engineering, and you can look at something in English, or you can do something anywhere else that you want. So you can basically put together your own menu. You do a core subject, so you do all the core subjects you have to do that gets you to that qualification, but you can do them in a myriad of ways. You can do them across different campuses. You can do them across the globe. It's not unusual now for students to do a semester overseas. It's not unusual for postgraduate students to do a lot of their work by virtual as well. So they will use their webcam. They might be in Shanghai or they might be in Korea, but they might be doing a course at Monash, or they might be doing a course in New York. And it's not unusual for those people to come together online. So what we're finding now is that whereas before education was all about getting people into what I call a box, into a classroom, and if we could push them through the door, they were our students, and that's where they stayed for the 2 or 3 years, it's not necessarily the case anymore. A student is somebody that wants to learn. An education provider is somebody who has the ability to teach, and how they teach, where they teach, what they teach is really a conversation between the two, the learner and the educator now. And that's a really different paradigm.
It is, but one of the things that seems to be missing in this whole wondrous thing called going overseas to do a study program is the cultural exchange that you get. I mean, Australia likes to talk about how, you know, so many foreign students have come through universities in this country. They've gone back with a better understanding of Australia and how Australians work. And there's a discourse that happens with between countries. And many of these one-time students in Australia have ended up in government positions in our neighbouring countries, and that's all been terrific for the dialogue between the countries. Are we losing that?
No, I think we're going to gain far more of it, because what we're finding is that students now are becoming more and more appreciative of the world around them. They are wanting to go overseas to travel. They're also learning with many more people in their classrooms, in the physical classrooms. They're actually exposed far more to the world than they ever were before. But what the opportunity here is that we can, in fact, bring lots and lots of overseas students in without physically having to bring them in. So parts of their courses can actually be done in Australia. One of the things that we toy with at universities and other places is finding the best lecturer, for instance, in a particular topic. Does it really matter where he or she physically is? The best person to talk about retail, consumer behaviour or medicine or whatever it is could give a lecture to anybody in the world. It doesn't matter where they physically are. And the tutorial could be held back at their physical premises. So I could give a lecture out of Sydney, for instance, on a topic that I'm particularly good at. It could be used as a core teaching around the globe or to the universities that want to use it. And then in their own environments, they can use that as a base tool to go and do their tutorials and their assignments and the other things.
I think the possibilities are amazing, but I'm also hearing this alarm bell saying jobs will go.
Again, I don't think so. I think there'll be more jobs because education sector will spread out. The other nice thing that I'm seeing down the track, and it is nice from my viewpoint, is that industry is getting far more involved in education too. So you're finding that not only are there academics, but there also now are industry experts, as I've just explained, and also industry is beginning to fund a lot of these courses too. They're actually saying, look, we want you to teach people a particular thing or in a particular way. Will you do it? So lots of collaboration coming down the track.
So there will be jobs just in different parts,
as always,
in different parts of the
industry.
As we evolve.
As it's always been.
Maurice Misiolowski, it's always interesting to talk to you. Businessfutures.com is where you can find him, and we'll catch up again in 2 weeks.
Look forward to it.
Thank you.
Radio Australia, on air and online at radioaustralia.net.au.